Okay, now let's get right into our news bulletin for today. Welcome to today's On The Radar News Bulletin. Today is, of course, the 11th of March, 2025, and the time is 45 minutes past 1 o'clock. As you know, we have been covering the IUM Inauguration University at the Inanna campus. I'm sure you have been following. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to bring you another informative episode of On The Radar News Bulletin, where we keep you updated on the latest headlines, trending topics, and important events both in Namibia and around the world. Now, whether you are at home or on the go or just tuning in, we've got you covered with all the news you need to know to stay informed and ahead. Stay with us as we dive into these top stories. Also, remember, we love hearing from you, our listeners. If you'd like to share your thoughts or join the conversation, give us a call on 083-288-401. We are ready to hear from you. Now, leading the news bulletin, the Namibian government has recently announced a revision to the Daily Sustenance Allowance, also known as DSA, commonly known as S&T, for public servants. The new rates, which are set to take effect on April 1st, 2025, have raised important questions regarding their impact on both civil servants and the country's overall budget. Historically, S&T allowances have been a point of contention, often cited as a strain on government finances. With this revision, many are left wondering, are the new rates a step towards providing much-needed relief to civil servants, or will they further burden an already stretched national budget? This afternoon, we dive into the implications of this decision. Is this revision fiscally possible? Or could it signal a shift in national budget priorities toward better compensating civil servants? We'll also take a closer look at the broader context of these changes and what it means for the future of Namibia's fiscal policy. Now, our reporter Justicia Shipena speaks to labor expert Herbert Young, who will shed light on the potential impact this could have on public servants and the country's economic framework. Let's take a listen to that conversation.
Right now, as the Office of the Prime Minister announced a revision of the DSA rates, the S&T allowance, we are now joined by labor expert Herbert Young. A good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Right now, with this revision of S&Ts, how do you assess the potential financial burden that this would have on the national budget?
Well, we would need to, of course, look in detail at what the revised rates are. I assume they will be increased further, and therefore it has budgetary implications. The question of S&Ts in the civil servants and, of course, also for political office bearers, for the ministers, has been something that was dubious, to say the least, for a long time. Mm-hmm. We know of several examples where, for example, a deputy minister has stated that they can basically double their income through excessive traveling where they benefit from S&Ts. Now, it's maybe not exactly the same for civil servants, but there is maybe a strong misconception, and the incentive was created through S&T for people to travel. Mm-hmm. Now, that is problematic because travel, if it's part of your job, should be just as that. And S&T should merely provide that people who are traveling are not losing money, that they have to dig into their own pockets for essential things. Mm-hmm. And that should be covered by S&Ts. Now, if that's the principle, then S&Ts must be very modest. For example, if you are traveling and costs of food and accommodation are already paid, there's very little need for receiving additional S&Ts. But as these rates were set, and they were very lucrative in the past, people were very eager to go on trips. Often it was also not clear if these trips really enhance the world or if it's more of a joyride. Mm-hmm. And that has been admitted repeatedly by the former president, Hage Geingob. There were talks of limiting travel and needing presidential approval as far as cabinet is concerned, because people traveled almost nonstop, and often that meant they spend less time doing their actual work. And so in the civil service as a whole, that needs to be considered as well. Mm-hmm. Where travel is part of the work, absolutely fine. It must be done. People get paid for that. And the S&T should nearly cover the actual additional cost. If it's more than that, then there is an incentive created to travel just to earn more. And I think this has been the overall problem with the S&Ts since they were introduced, or since we were aware of them after independence. Mm-hmm.
And given that S&Ts have previously strained government finances, as you alluded to the challenges that come with it, do you think this new step is financially responsible? And what measures can be taken to prevent these allowances from becoming unsustainable in the long run?
Yeah, as I said, we need to look at the exact rates and the motivation. But overall, if it's not very modest and if it's not meant to just cover additional costs while traveling, then it is draining the fiscus again. And it's an expenditure that can hardly be justified as essential and as a priority right now. But equally important, the kind of control over travel needs to be intensified so that it's really only worthwhile trips that are undertaken and that promote and support the work of the public sector.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Yao, of course, the public servants have long advocated for issues such as salary increase, stating that food prices are going up and also bringing in the factors of inflation. And this is something you had also spoken of when there was that debate regarding public servant salary increases in that regard. And this is something that comes up every time when we do expect the national budget. Now, in the context of economic growth and inflation, is the adjustment to S&T allowances justified?
I would say, you know, when you want to make adjustments, when you want to take care of inflation and higher cost of living for some civil servant, then accommodate that through wage increases, through increases in salary as negotiated with the union. That is a far more fair and justifiable adjustment for all the civil servants. If you adjust only S&T, that might benefit a few, those who will travel. And as I said, it's not always clear if these travels really are supportive and enhance their work. And therefore, when you look at priority right now, I would think increasing S&Ts cannot be anywhere near the top of the agenda. And therefore, the move is a bit dubious, but one, of course, needs to look at the details to what levels are these S&Ts going to be increased. Then one can see further. But in principle, adjustments in the civil service in terms of inflation, increasing costs of living, should be done through wage increases, not through S&T increases.
Right. Now, when we got this news, we had a lot of people coming out to say that S&T only benefits some people, mainly those in higher positions. And yes, do we expect the new administration to prioritize public servants more in the upcoming national budget, or is this signaling towards that?
No, I would agree when you look at it, it tends to be people in higher positions, management cadre, who are already far better paid than others. Now, if they still benefit from higher S&Ts, and they are often the ones who can decide on trips and who would go, then you have a further increase in terms of inequality within the civil service. So overall, with the budget and the constraints, I cannot see that government will lavishly increase wages in the civil service. The unions will have to negotiate hard for that one. And the increase in S&Ts is, again, increasing at the wrong end of the spectrum, namely those who are already better off. And Namibia needs the absolute opposite. We need to focus on people who are in the lower income categories, which is the majority of Namibians. We've seen the new data of the census that was released earlier this year, shows very clearly how most Namibians are in very, very low and precarious forms of employment and incomes. And that's where the focus should be, not on those who are already well off.
Right. Now, speaking of focus, when we do look at this revision of S&T rates, could it lead to budget reallocations in other critical sectors such as health and education or even infrastructure?
It could be, but that is speculative at this point in time. But what is clear is that the budget is constrained and that government will struggle to find necessary resources, and therefore allocating them to increased SMTs is a dubious priority.
Lastly, Mr. Yao, what does this say about government expenditure moving forward as we are now seeing that announcement of S&T and the new administration coming in? What does this say about government's expenditure come the national budget, but also in the upcoming years?
In the national budget, I wouldn't expect any surprises. In any case, it's 3-year budgetary cycles. The finance minister has repeatedly stated that they're trying to cut expenses. I don't see in the near future a change away from that. However, government needs to realize in terms of the statistics we have about increasing poverty and increasing unemployment in the country, which in turn also increases inequality, that government needs to intervene decisively at the lower end, and their proposals like the universal basic income grant are very crucial to make a difference. And hopefully the new administration will pay some attention to that and will focus on an intervention that deals more decisively and holistically with poverty and unemployment, and also as a measure to stimulate the economy, to increase expenditure amongst Namibians again, as a tool of economic recovery. I hope the incoming administration of our new president will focus on that and then decide and weigh up what would be the best way to tackle this monumental crisis that so many Namibians are facing right now. As I mentioned, the increase in S&T will do nothing to alleviate that problem.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Yao, for speaking to Eagle FM.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
The daily subsistence allowance, DSA, was last reviewed in 2008, and the new rates aim to align with inflation over the years. The Office of the Prime Minister, OPM, is expected to release a circular detailing the approved adjustments in due course. However, subsistence and travel S&T allowances have long been criticized for misuse. Reports indicate that few adhere strictly to the policy defining DSA as compensation for necessary expenses incurred during official travel. The allowance is categorized into 3 tiers. Rate 1 covers accommodation, meals, and incidental expenses. Rate 2 includes meals and incidental expenses. And Rate 3 accounts for incidental expenses only. Now, despite these classifications, officials are often accused of claiming full rates, even when their trips are fully or partially funded by hosts. In 2023, Minister of Higher Education Itakanji Murangi faced scrutiny over allegations that she received S&T allowances for a fully sponsored trip financed by the Namibia University of Science and Technology. Similarly, in 2024, an audit report on the Namibia Central Intelligence Service and CIS fridged concerns over revenue overestimation and unaccounted for S&T payments. The report revealed that as of 31st March 2023, an outstanding amount of $37,172 remained unaccounted for. Auditor General Junius Kanjeke also highlighted inconsistencies in NSIS revenue projections. Concerns over S&T spending are not new. In 2009, reports estimated that government officials collectively received around about $1 billion daily in taxpayer-funded allowances. In 2022, Eagle FM reported that the Office of the President spent $48 million on S&T. More recently, it was reported that President Angolo Mbumba traveled to 14 countries within 11 months, qualifying for approximately $1.9 million in travel allowances. And now for your opinions and contributions, we invite you to partake on the news bulletin that is by dialing in studio on 083-288-401. And we'll be right back after a short break. Stick with us on the Radar for all the top stories that matter. Don't go anywhere.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kudite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe mbali heavy nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Don't be a silent listener. You can air your opinions, ask questions and converse with us in studio on 083-288-401.
Welcome back. Namibia, like many other countries, has seen significant urbanization over the past few decades. The capital city, Windhoek, along with other major towns, has experienced rapid population growth. According to the recent estimates, Windhoek's population has been growing at an annual rate of about 3.6%, putting pressure on housing, infrastructure, and social services. Despite several government initiatives to address the housing issue, affordability remains a significant barrier for many Namibians. A large percentage of the population cannot afford to buy or rent homes due to their low income levels, while the cost of construction and land acquisition has risen significantly. Access to affordable housing finance is another critical factor contributing to Namibia's housing crisis. Many low-income households are unable to secure financing for home ownership due to high interest rates, strict lending criteria, and a lack of collateral. A significant portion of the population does not have access to mortgage financing. Financial institutions in Namibia often have stringent requirements, and many people, especially in informal settlements, do not meet the criteria for loans. Secondary towns in Namibia represent an opportunity to alleviate the pressure on major cities like Windhoek. These towns have large areas of land that could be used for affordable housing development, and investing in them could help decentralize population growth. By focusing on improving infrastructure and housing in secondary towns, the government could encourage people to settle outside the capital, reducing population pressure and the strain on housing resources in Windhoek. Now, despite various housing initiatives in Namibia, affordability remains a persistent challenge, largely due to economic constraints and high building costs, says FNB economist Mandisa van Wyk. Van Wyk highlighted that employment challenges significantly impact affordability, citing the latest Namibia Statistics Agency labor report. She warned that ongoing delays in housing projects could accelerate the informal settlement crisis. Van Wyk also stressed the need for improved public-private partnerships in housing delivery, citing challenges in implementation and procurement processes as major setbacks. On Namibia's decentralization policy, she acknowledged its benefits in reducing pressure on Windhoek, but pointing out that economic opportunities remain concentrated in the capital. Good afternoon, Mandisa van Wyk. Pleasure to have you on the Radar News Bulletin.
Good day. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, Namibia has faced persistent challenges in providing affordable housing despite the introduction of various initiatives such as the National Housing Enterprise, NHE, and the Mass Housing Development Program. Now, despite multiple housing initiatives, why is affordability still a challenge in Namibia?
Thank you for that question. So just looking at it from a perspective of employment challenges that we have in the country, as we noted from the recent labor report by the Namibia Statistics Agency, only 46.2% of the working age population are active in the labor market. And of these, 55.4% earn less than $5,000 per month, with only 2.6% earning $40,000 per month. So from an affordability perspective, consumers themselves are constrained and have monetary pressures. And then looking at it from an input cost perspective, building costs, affordability for land, all those aspects make it quite a stringent market, and the access for individuals to purchase is quite limited.
Is there a risk that ongoing delays in housing projects could worsen the informal settlement crisis?
This possibly could be a reason, considering that housing is a fundamental right for everybody and it is a need that everyone has. Therefore, the growing informal settlements is individuals' way for a solution. However, the ongoing delays would possibly strain that market. And as we've seen from the recent floods, it has affected individuals and their livelihoods, and it's definitely a crisis that needs addressing.
Mm-hmm. And how can public-private partnerships be better leveraged to scale up housing delivery?
I think the biggest issue that we have is the implementation phase, the procurement processes, the delays in that. That definitely impacts the successful working of public-private partnerships, although they are necessary to assist, especially government initiatives.
It definitely needs a lot of input. Now, Mandisa, to what extent has Namibia's decentralization policy contributed to addressing the housing crisis?
It's definitely a good initiative in order to put away pressure, especially from the capital city. However, that is where most opportunities lie within the market. So a lot of individuals flock towards the city for better opportunities, to be able to provide for their families. Mm-hmm. So as much as the focus is towards regions, I think the biggest the biggest problem to fix is basically the employment problem, which initially would give people within those within regions more opportunities to kind of lessen the load on just one specific city.
Now, Mandisa, from an economics perspective, how would you say can investment in secondary towns reduce the population pressure on Windhoek and alleviate its housing crisis?
There needs to be opportunities, and we see opportunities arising, especially in the oil and gas sector. So that could possibly help with employment opportunities. We also have the green hydrogen initiatives and the logistics industry. So there is some progress. Not sure the pace at which it is coming about, but I think once opportunities are garnered and they can be spread out throughout the country, it would help alleviate the housing crisis that we do face as individuals. We'll be able to get housing in different areas from the underpinning of having employment. So I think the biggest issue is the employment crisis
that we face.
Yeah.
Okay. Mandisa, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radio News Bulletin.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And we invite you also to be to partake in the conversation, that is by dialing in the studio number, that is 083-288-401. Now, I'll see you after the commercial break to bring you yet more news right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
The Ministry of Gender Equality, Poverty, Eradication and Social Welfare has rolled out the Condition of Basic Income Grant, also known as CBIG, to 20 towns and urban settings, targeting vulnerable households affected by rising urban hunger and malnutrition. Executive Director of the Ministry, Ndita Nyipondoka Robiati, stated that CBIG serves as a continuation of the government's food bank initiative, which was previously converted from food parcels to a cash grant of $600. To qualify, households must be located in an urban area and have a total household income of not more than $1,600. Nyipondoka Robiati stressed that those driving cars or earning above the threshold do not qualify for the grant. She further explained that the government defines as a household as a group of people who eat together, typically consisting of 6 to 7 members. Despite the financial support provided by the state, Nyipondoka Robiati acknowledged cases of abuse where guardians misused the funds meant for children's welfare. She urged the public to report such incidents to the regional offices for intervention.
And then, of course, you know that there's a new kid on the block, the Condition of Basic Income Grant, which was rolled out to 20 towns and urban settings last November and December. Of course, you know that the CBIG was a kind of a follow-up to the food bank, when we converted food bank from food parcels to a cash, a grant, which is $600.
Mm-hmm.
We have now rolled out CBIG to 20 areas, as I mentioned to you, and we have now, it's urban, so the conditions is that it has to be an urban household to try to address urban hunger.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that the statistics are very clear that there's been a rise in urban malnutrition as well. So it was partly to really cover the very destitute and the very vulnerable. That's what CBIG is supposed to do. It's not for the others that come there driving a car. Clearly, if you drive a car, you are not, you don't qualify for CBIG.
Okay.
So what we looked at was the definition of a household, of course, which we know is a very contested topic, but a household is defined as the people who eat together.
Okay.
And on average, it's between 6 and maybe 7 people. That's a household that eats together.
Okay.
And that household should be in urban area, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And that household should not have an income of more than 1,600, which is equal to any of the grants that we have.
Okay.
It also has to, you have to then show that you live in that area, whether it's through a municipal bill or in a station from the persons where you live. And yes, I think those are the main criteria, is that it has to be urban. You cannot have an allowance more than 1,600 in the household.
Okay.
And of course, we check it through with Social Security, as well as that's the main one to see if you're actually employed.
Yeah.
So yeah, so for the grants, so these are the ones that we have mentioned. And really to just give you an example, the statistics is that currently the coverage is really good for the old age grant. Our coverage is about 100% So you're probably wondering why 105% is because There are those people that are maybe passed away and we don't have all the information yet to de-link them. There are those that were permanent residents that have maybe left. Mm. And in the meantime, we have new people who turned 60 that then got also onto the grant. So that is what we're trying to look at. Mm-hmm. The children's grant in totality, that includes the disability grant as well as the normal OVC grants, okay. Is quite significant. We have close to 376,000 children registered on our wow. OVC, yes. So this is it's more than 10% of our population if you look at the last census data that was given to us. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it is a worrying trend. You don't want to have that many children vulnerable. But, of course, we know that it's because of COVID primarily mm-hmm. and the economic downturn that led to a lot of this vulnerability in our community. And, of course, children suffer the most out of it. And yes. Yeah. But of course, there is also a lot of abuse whereby we know that there are parents or guardians who take the funds and don't utilize them for the well-being and the welfare of the children. Mm. We are trying to tighten up on it. It's a little bit challenging looking at the constraints in human resources because this would also be then undertaken by our social workers as well as the police. Because it's very clear, the act is very clear on what happens when there's abuse of these funds. And I really just want to reach out to the public. If you know those that are abusing the fund, please reach out to our various officers in the regions and report it because it is not fair that this child is now being disadvantaged whereby the state makes provisions to uplift this child. Okay. So please do report any of those cases and we should be able to tackle them accordingly. But the Child Care Protection Act is very clear on maintenance. The parents are obliged, mother or father who is working and the other one is not working, they are obliged for that maintenance. Even if they are working, they are obliged to take that care of that child. And I know that not enough women and men use this provision.
Such a pity and a shame that the government makes provision for vulnerable children to receive a grant and the parents instead abuse it. And some could abuse it by taking that money to actually drink alcohol, buy alcohol and all that kind of stuff. And all the luxurious stuff for them while the child goes to school without a proper school uniform. And for some, even in the rural areas without school shoes. Indeed, it is our duty as community members to take note and be vigilant on how and take responsibilities for others on how they are actually using those funds and, like she said, report those who are abusing them. Now, we also invite you to partake in this conversation, be part of the news bulletin, and don't be a silent listener. That is by dialing in studio, that is on 083-288-401. As for now, I'll see you after the commercial break, but we have yet more news coming your way, so don't go anywhere.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kudite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo IGL FM otuna ebi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko IGL FM onora etatu imwe mbali heari nola natu heari bali no heari ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane IGL FM the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Now, in other news, Namibia's Green Iron project will come online soon. Johannes Michels, a project manager at Hiron Oshivela, shares the latest update on site progress near Arandas. With major installations nearly complete, the team is gearing up for the first production of direct reduced iron ore.
You can see behind us, we've completed the PV power plant, which is currently Namibia's second largest PV power plant with 25 megawatt peak. So that's around about 44,000 panels that we've put and connected. Currently also largest battery storage system, which is already in operations. So there we have 13.5 megawatt hours of battery storage. So these two parts are fully functional. We are done with the commissioning. We've installed the electronic management system that will regulate the charge and discharge of the factory. And we are currently already powering up some parts of the factory. So the next part is the electrolyzer. That's currently also largest electrolyzer in Southern Africa with a 12 megawatt capacity. We are done with the cold commissioning of it, and now we are busy with the hot commissioning. So we bring power already on. We are currently testing all the pipes for their pressure resistance. So we have to go up to higher pressure levels, and there we have to do some testing to see that we did the welding well. After these tests, we will do some measurements on the power coming out, on the harmonics and so on. And then we will switch on the electrolyzer and produce the first industrial scale green iron in Namibia. That should be within the next 2 weeks. And behind me and around me, that's the furnace. We've already started a big part of the engines that we have. So the furnace has been turning. We've tested some of the key functionalities of it, and we hope to still this week or latest on the weekend, beginning of next week, that we can heat up the furnace the first time. And then also transport some material through it. We are very, very doing very good in the cold and hot commissioning of the different machines. And we are very positive to soon present the first green iron produced in Namibia.
This comes as High Iron Oshivela's Green Iron Project lowered electrolyzer operating costs, maintaining expenses at its Aranda site at 7,411 Namibian dollars, that is about 400 US dollars per kilowatts per hour. This achievement enhances the project's affordability and scalability within the renewable hydrogen sector. Electrolyzers, which enable the electrolysis process, splitting water into hydrogen and oxygen using electricity, are among the most costly components in green hydrogen production. Globally, electrolyzers prices typically range from 37,055 Namibian dollars, that is roughly 2,000 US dollars, to 55,583 Namibian dollars, about 3,000 US dollars per kilowatt per hour. The project is set to commence production in approximately 2 weeks. Now, launched in November 2023 with a 600 Namibian dollar 600 million Namibian dollar investment, the High Iron Oshivela Green Iron Initiative is a collaborative effort involving the Namibian government, Germany's Ministry of Economic and Climate Action, and various European stakeholders. Initially, the project aimed to produce 15,000 tons of iron per year, with a potential for increased output beyond the pilot phase. In the same month of its launch, High Iron Oshivela secured its first offtake agreement with the German automotive technology company Benteler, under which it will supply up to 200,000 tons of direct reduced iron, also known as DRI, annually using a green hydrogen technology. Also in November, the project unveiled Southern Africa's largest electrolyzer, a 12-megawatt unit capable of producing 15,000 tons of direct reduced iron per year in its initial phase. At peak capacity, the project could generate 1 million tons of iron annually, while mitigating 1.8 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalent to CO2 emissions each year. It scaled to meet an anticipated additional production demand of 300 million tons by 2030. The initiative has the potential to prevent up to 550 million tons of CO2 emissions annually. And that wraps up today's On The Radar News Bulletin. So do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program with David Shombe. And thereafter, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut keeps you company from 16:30. Remember, the Villager newspaper, the e-paper, will be available tomorrow, Wednesday. Make sure that you already subscribe to our WhatsApp channel that is on 08. Send a text message to 081-200-4144 to receive your tri-weekly dose of social and economic news. That is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And if you would like to advertise with us, that is on our Facebook page, that is Eagle FM Namibia Facebook page, or the Villager newspaper, kindly contact on 083-288-401 so that your company can get the visibility that it needs. Now from Inda for Happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day.
Shiwanasha Namibia, Hamberera omwakarunga koe pamwe na imba. Inokara uri kwanima yesiga. Endera pamwe nethimbo muyuni wa technology. Imonena eimbiro joe mwene kongodhi yoye yopeke pamwe na imba. Imba oteta pamwe oshiwana no kwanja kakaneka onjimbo moshiwana ashihe sha Namibia. Moka epaka imba otamu adhika ehwata jonjimbo dhoongereka dhayooloka. Ngaashi ehangano ja Elsin, omaimburiro joshiherero, simane kakarunga ja katolika karoma, joshimburu sang fuartiera noongereka dhimwe. Tudengera nena ngere owapumbwa omaimbiro ongereka yoye gakale gagwedhwako koka epa ka imbako nora hetatu imwe mbarindatu tano hetatu nora hamano ndatu nenge ututumine o email ko digital@omalaiti.com. Oto vuru ku adha oka epa ka imbako App Store noko Google Play Store. Imonena imbagoye nena.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Don't be a silent listener. You can air your opinions, ask questions, and converse with us in studio on 083-288-400.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna e mitoda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe mbali heavy nola natu. Heali bali no heali ileko berewa Brahetatu Natu, Bali o Hetatu Watatu, Oma Felane, Egelefem, the Eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.